Well, that's the Geek Speak theme. Must be time for Geek Speak. It is, in fact, Saturday, October 5th, 2013, and we're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. And please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. KUSP is supported by Chartwell School, providing students in grades 2 through 12 with the skills to overcome learning challenges, hosting an open house on Tuesday from 10:30 a.m. till noon. Details at chartwell.org. I am Bonnie Jean Primsch, filling in for your normal host, Lyle Troxell, my mediator and broadcaster. And with me today in the studio is Brian Young, an iOS developer and designer, virtual lighting designer, who is, are you still currently looking for work?
I am still currently looking for work.
Okay. And also Lindsay Lonnie, a special systems analyst, support engineer, and software engineer. Hi, Lindsay. How's it going?
I'm special, too.
That's great. Can I hear you? Did everyone hear you? No, how about now?
Here we go.
Oh, yeah, that sounds right.
I am okay. Special. Good morning, Brian.
That's great. Okay. And so then, could you say something else, Brian?
Good morning.
Okay, now I think I figured out the microphones here. Woo-hoo. At the station. How long have I been here? For gosh sakes. All right. Well, it's an exciting show today because not only is there plenty to talk about, but also we're raising key funds for KUSP as we move forward here for the next 6 months. Brian, what's going on? What's the goal here?
Well, we're in the middle of a $5,000 match from Susie and Charlie Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
We have 3,375 so far, and we're looking to match the full 5,000.
Ooh, so there's something over 1,000 and pico left to go.
Pico. Yes.
Very good. Well, that's enough for us to chew on right now. So what that means is anyone listening right now or later on the podcast, it's still time for you to offer a contribution in support of KUSP. This is the radio station that brings you Geek Speak. That's what we're looking for here.
I have faith in our listeners.
Yeah, do you? Yeah, and so, Lindsay, some people have contacted us already this morning, and you've got...
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Darlene from Santa Cruz for supporting. She called in during Dr. Dawn's show, and we really appreciate the support. It's getting us closer to matching our goal.
Really nice, really nice. And, in fact, it looks like they're still tallying from the finish of Ask. It was a lovely flurry right at the end there.
Yeah.
So we'll keep you updated throughout the show. I just wanted to point out that this show, particularly Geek Speak, has been a lovely educational resource for people, not only in our broadcast area, but beyond. We got an email a while back from a fellow named Matt. He says, hi, guys. I teach chemistry at Highland High School, Gilbert Public Schools in Gilbert, Arizona. He says, this is my second week teaching. This was back when he wrote us a few months ago. And I'm using part of your show about testing batteries to help teach about the scientific method. Do you remember that show, Brian?
Oh, yeah. We had a great time with that.
Yeah, that was an experiment that you brought in.
Yeah, so just a reminder to everybody, this was a simple way to test the strength of your batteries to see if you have any more juice left in them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take a AA battery, and if the battery is fully used up and has no more voltage in it, you'll drop the battery, and it will just make a sort of a thud and fall over.
Uh-huh.
and not do so much. But if you dropped one that had a full charge in it, it's going to have a nice little spring and stay standing up.
Yeah, so there he was at his class, demonstrating this effect, and the students were all bouncing batteries on the tables. He says, listen, I did this. I know there are probably copyright issues with using the podcast and the KUSP symbols, et cetera, but I'm not selling it or anything like that. I just thought you should know. Matt, just so you know, you did it right. We love being an educational resource and having our stuff used in the schools. He says, my students are mostly second-year high school students, and thanks for the great material. So there you go. We're having effects above and beyond even the broadcast area. So when you support KUSP, you support the material that people can use in their classrooms. And how would one support KUSP, Lonnie?
isn't it great to have radio that supports critical thinking instead of just being concerned about profits? You know, we're a nonprofit radio station. We really appreciate your support. We run solely on people calling in and helping us right
now. That's true.
Keeps us going.
Yeah.
And we can give you more of this critical thinking and broaden horizons radio.
Yes. Yeah. That's the idea.
Exactly.
So what can people do?
They can give us a call.
Yes.
At 1-888-777-1507.
Mm-hmm.
And they can visit us on the web at...
Yeah, at KUSP.org, which is a great way to do it if the lines are all busy. You should not have to wait to do a generous thing to KUSP. So if you find yourself with a busy signal, go on over to KUSP.org. You can pick, I don't know, $10 a month, $20 a month. It's really up to you how much you give to KUSP. But just the fact that you're standing up and offering a little something means that we'll be all the stronger and available to whoever needs us. All right. Well, there's lots to talk about today. What's up with NASA, Lindsay?
So NASA has what they call, quote unquote, the problem. It's so ubiquitous, everyone knows about it, and they just call it the problem.
Oh, it's the problem.
And there's people that are concerned that it could have a big impact or end deep space exploration.
Uh-huh.
That's a tongue twister.
Uh-huh.
Most of what humanity knows about the outer planets came back to Earth from spacecraft powered by batteries full of plutonium-238. I don't know if you are familiar with plutonium-238,
no.
But I'll give you a little information.
Okay, yes. Learn us up.
So Voyager's exploration of Jupiter and Saturn, Cassini's ongoing exploration of Saturn, mm-hmm. Galileo's trip to Jupiter, Curiosity's exploration of the surface of Mars, and the 2015 flyby of Pluto by the New Horizons spacecraft were all fueled by plutonium-238. Now,
it's a key element, as it were.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
And plutonium-239 is what is used for creating nuclear bombs. So even though they sound very similar, it's very different. It would be nearly impossible to make any sort of nuclear weapon with plutonium-238. It was largely acquired as a byproduct of making weapons for a very long time, but we have the technology to make it. It's just very intensive and expensive. And with all the funding that's being cut from programs like, you know, NASA, different other supported programs, people are concerned that we're not going to have enough to do more deep space exploration. It's
uh-oh.
A super fuel. I know, right? We want to be able to see those pictures of Saturn's rings, right?
That's how we dream.
Exactly. It's a super fuel because it's radioactive, so its atomic structure is unstable. Radioactive decay produces extremely high heat, like up to nearly 1260 degrees Celsius, which that's pretty hot. And it can be harnessed by thermoelectrics to produce electricity. So it's one of the few things that they can use to power these long-term missions.
Okay.
There's no other viable battery option currently.
Oh,
solar power is too weak, chemical batteries don't last, and nuclear fission systems are too heavy. So we depend on these batteries powered by plutonium-238. The problem is that we've used most of it already. The battery that powers NASA's Curiosity rover, which is currently studying the surface of Mars, contains about 10 pounds of plutonium.
Okay.
238.
Yeah.
The entire country's scientific stockpile has dwindled to 36 pounds.
Oh.
So that's like three missions maybe.
That's three missions maybe.
Yeah.
Three and a little.
Side note, it's about two times as dense as lead, which I didn't know that it was that dense.
Mm.
So a lot of the deep space missions have been canceled or delayed until they can find new ways to get or make it. For a while, Russia was saying that they would, you know, give us some of the stuff that they had. We could buy it from them.
Oh, we could buy it from
as
them.
They dismantle nuclear weapons and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Huh.
But that ended up falling through. We got some and then not as much as we thought we were going to get.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of laws surrounding it make it difficult to get.
Right.
I'm sure
that's for a reason. If it's
right.
also used in nuclear weapons.
No, it is not.
Oh, it's not.
It is not
okay.
used in nuclear weapons. That's 239.
That's a whole other plutonium.
Right. It's a whole other plutonium.
Okay.
This
understood.
Is the good stuff.
Okay.
Countless scientists and their lobbyists took about 15 years to get lawmakers to take this seriously and the problem. They released a paper about this. Then the government recently approved spending about $10 million a year to restart production means that were closed down 20 years ago. So the Department of Energy thinks that $10 to $20 million each year through 2020 could yield an operation capable of making about 3.3 to 11 pounds of plutonium-238 annually. And they think that that could keep missions going. It would delay things, but that would be enough. The problem is they need to keep funding going.
Right, right.
So I just bring it up because if it's important to people to do these kinds of things, you know, talk to your representatives and say, hey, hey, you know, thanks for getting that pass to get some of that funding done, but let's keep it going, because at any moment they're just fearful that it's going to get pulled.
And if you have an idea for how to synthesize plutonium-238, contact your authorities as soon as possible.
Right. If you have some in your garage, go ahead and send it to... No, I don't know.
So there's one thing that wasn't clear. So can you create plutonium-238 from the nuclear weapons that we have in our stockpile now?
I don't know if we are planning on dismantling our nuclear weapons or not.
Oh, no. Why would we do that?
Yeah. But you can, from what I read, create plutonium-238 in small quantities by dismantling the weapons and using them.
So that's part of what the Russian deal was about, right? Like, oh, great, we'll take that. Oh, it's less than we thought.
And they're talking about new ways of making it, but it's just, you know, expensive, time-consuming,
we gotta
budget
get on
issues.
That.
Yeah.
Wow. And when we can't really get together to talk about alternative fuels for petroleum.
Right.
Get everyone on the same page about alternative fuel for plutonium might
right.
be
and you space travel
trickier.
Versus getting down the street, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is important, right? You have to have the right fuel cell of some kind for the right vehicle. Brian, I hear Tesla's had a little bit of a setback as far as that goes.
Well, it's a setback depending on how you look at it. But so with new technologies, there's always going to be a new slew of things to learn, problems that happen. So it caught a lot of attention this week when a new Tesla S caught fire and was flaming pretty good on the freeway. Somebody took a video of it that did the rounds, and it made quite a bit of attention. So some people would think, oh my goodness, electric batteries and electric cars, now we've got this whole new problem of cars blowing up on the road. But as it turns out, they keep track of these things over at Tesla for how many miles driven versus how many fires burning up, and they like to compare those to gasoline-powered cars.
Right.
And they're completely on par with what gasoline cars would do. In fact, they're doing better, according to Elon Musk, on how many miles driven versus how many fires happen.
Right.
But it's still, since we've got this new technology of batteries, the fires are different. Fire departments are going to have to deal with the fact that it's not gasoline burning up there, but it's a highly dense battery deep in the car that's surrounded by all this shielding. So, in fact, if you look at the Tesla guide to fire departments on how to deal with emergencies, they talk about how you really need to monitor it for 24 hours and use a infrared heat sensing camera to determine whether the battery is cooled down enough.
Okay. Well, who's got that lying around? I don't know.
The good news is they built Teslas so that this fire couldn't spread. In fact, it only was burning in the front compartment of the car. Didn't reach the cabin.
Okay. So they thought of that. Well, good news, gang. If you're interested more in the story, Life in the Fast Lane this week features an interview with Tesla engineers about the accident. So you can stay tuned for that. Kelly O'Brien's Life in the Fast Lane. Also big fans of following what's going on with Elon Musk's various projects.
Yeah.
Nice. And what else is going on with Tesla?
Well, if you're really excited about them, I'm excited about this. You can actually rent them now.
Oh.
Hertz has their, what do they call that program? They have a program where you can rent... rent awesome cars. And you can now go to LAX in Los Angeles or the SFO airport and rent for $500 a day a Tesla Model S and give it a try. I would love to do this. It's not exactly in my pocket change at the moment, but I got to see one of these at the showroom recently. And they're really impressive when you see them stripped down to nothing but the chassis.
Right.
There's no engine. It's all compact in there. I want to see what it's like.
Huh. So was it $500 to rent it for a day?
$500 for a day.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Start gathering together your birthday money, everybody.
I wonder how many seatbelts there are in there if you pool your funds, you know.
Yeah, how many people can you cram
into
one?
They have a model that'll hold seven people.
Hey, that's not bad.
Yeah, all right. That's, you know, per
who
person.
Gets to drive. Okay, pull over. It's my turn.
We've got all day. I know, but you should be... Okay, anyway. Well, gang, we'll be right back after a break. You're listening to Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP. Oh, very exciting here at Pledge Drive World Headquarters for KUSP. We had a very generous grant from Susie and Charlie Franklin. $5,000 they offered to encourage people to go to the phone, go to the web, and make their contributions to this publicly supported station. And it was met... People were calling us and emailing us furiously. And in fact, that is it. $5,000 met. And so right now, Brian, we've got another person helping us out.
Yes, Wendell and Salinas will match every pledge to KSP up to a total of $500. Your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar if you call right now or make an online gift. Pledge online at KUSP and click the red donate button or call us at 1-888-777-1507.
All right.
Thanks, Wendell.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're still tallying the various people to thank about that. And I don't know if we have some that we can thank right now.
Okay. Let's thank.
Oh, they're over here.
There we go.
We're getting ourselves together.
Alice in Santa Cruz. Thank you so much.
All right.
And Dan and Laura in Boulder Creek. And Michael in Hollister. Claudia in Capitola, Kevin in Soquel.
Kind of running the gamut of the
Mark
county
in
there.
Santa Cruz.
Nice.
Wow, lots of people calling
lots
in.
Lots of people from all over.
Thanks a lot.
It's really, really nice. So thanks to those folks. You can join them. It is okay to continue supporting public radio, whether you've offered a gift in the past or are joining us for the first time. And when you do know that what you're doing is supporting an institution that makes it possible to rethink their whole lives. We got an email a while ago from what is this fellow's name? It was from a truck driver who had called us and asked, you know, how he could go about changing careers. He was like, oh, truck driving's okay, but he wanted to get into IT. His name's Kevin. And he wrote us a lovely letter, and I hope you don't mind. I'm just going to read it here. Because it's so sweet. The whole thing was just really impressive to me. He says, about 2 years ago, I called to ask about how to go about getting an IT job. I was a truck driver at the time, and it seemed like a daunting challenge. With your encouragement, I applied at our local school district for a tech support job. I didn't really think anything would come of it, but a month or two later, I got a phone call from a tech director. My interview went well enough that Carrie, the tech director, called me to tell me that I was their second choice out of 56 applicants. He offered some encouragement and ideas on how to get somewhere, and I guess he liked the idea of a 52-year-old truck driver trying to get a job in IT. Well, fast forward 9 months. It's late August 2012. I'm still driving a propane truck. Carrie calls and says he has a position open. I take the job. My first day on the job, I'm handed a MacBook Pro, an iPad, and what seems like several hundred passwords to memorize. I'm paired up with one of the other techs to learn the trade, and I get about 2 weeks of hand-holding in, at which point Carrie deems me trained enough.
Trained enough, right?
And unleashes me on the unwitting customers, which are the staff and students at the high school and middle school. One of my favorite memories is the look. Why does this keep jumping on me? One of my favorite memories is the look on the district superintendent gave me after asking what I did before I got this job. I guess she didn't expect me to reply that I was a propane delivery driver. I delivered a deadpan. And no question about it, my first few months are rough, but I live by the adage, data is king, and don't send anyone's data to the state of entropy. After a few months, I start to feel the digital flow and rhythms. He says, I grew up in Los Gatos and spent a lot of time body surfing at the 13th Street Beach in Santa Cruz, and the lessons of the ocean taught me about flow and rhythms and how that applies to skiing in the mountains or managing data and people. There is a tempo that the ocean, mountains, people, and data have. Try to change that tempo, and you end up in the rinse cycle. Find that tempo and just go. My scripting skills dovetail well with the other tech's knowledge of applications. I started carving our little chunks of time where I can write bash scripts that automate tedious and repetitive tasks. This is so clever. One checks all the printers for toner and reports back when I need to order some more. Another changes clients' passwords for wireless apps. These scripts give me more time to learn my job. It creates a synergy that carries through the first year. More scripts equals more time to work on the things I suck at. I received a new contract for this year, and it feels just like last year. Crazy busy, yet different. Now I get texts like, the wireless is down at the middle school. Create a workaround. The middle school is hosting an in-service for all teaching staff about SB 191, a Colorado bill that ties teacher pay to student performance. There are 125 teachers, 4 building principals, and the district superintendent that all need wireless. The district superintendent greets me at the door and says, when are we going to have internet? I text Carrie the question, and she asks me, that she asks me, and Carrie replies, well, maybe never, but I keep Carrie's response to myself. I dig through the recycle room and find some old crap and create an ad hoc wireless network in about an hour. I love my job and wanted to thank you for the encouragement you gave me. If you're ever in Colorado, he says, let me know and I'll buy you all a beer at Devil's Thumb.
Nice.
So that's it. We've had an offer of beer for our efforts. He says, I enjoy your show and listen whenever I can. Thanks, Kevin, EGSD Tech Department. Well, congratulations, Kevin.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that sweet? I'm so glad we could be useful in that way. And that is exactly the sort of thing that Wendell and Salinas is wanting to support when he offers a matching grant of $500 for GeekSpeak. So if you would like to meet any part of that $500, we encourage you to do so now. And how can people do that, Brian?
Oh, they can do that by calling 1-800-777-1507.
Mm-hmm.
We realize that when we stage a campaign like this, we're taking you out of your routine.
Yeah, a little bit.
We don't take that lightly.
No.
And that's why we do everything we can to make our drives as short as we can.
Yeah, that's the idea here.
We'll wrap up soon as we reach our goal of $125,000. After that, we're back to our regular schedule. Although this drive may be throwing you out of your daily rhythm, it's a small price to pay compared to the hours and hours of programs that you'll hear without interruption in the coming months. Please make your move now and donate before we wrap up. Contribute online at KUSP.org or at 1-888-777-1507.
It's 888-777-1507. Go ahead and go to the phone now and make your contribution as we continue this program. We certainly don't mind getting out of our usual Geek Speak routine to encourage you to do that because it matters a lot to us. So what else should we talk about, Lindsay?
Well, the annual World Solar Challenge is about to start.
Mm.
I don't know if you've ever heard or seen this, but it's a race of solar cars, essentially, in Australia. So on Sunday morning, Australian time, October 6th, 40 solar-powered vehicles from 24 countries will depart from Darwin and make their way south along the 3,000-kilometer Stuart Highway towards Adelaide in the 2013 World Solar Challenge. About half the vehicles compete in the Challenger class, which is the class that features what many people would recognize as typical solar racing cars, those flat UFO-like vehicles, you know?
Right, yeah.
With little tiny wheels underneath.
Yeah.
But exclusively for efficiency and speed, that's the Challengers.
Okay.
For the first time, much more practical vehicles will race each other in this particular race, and they're calling it the cruiser class. And they seat 2, 3, or 4 people, and they're road legal. So in 2009 and 2011, the winners, third place was Michigan Solar Team, Nuance Solar Team was second, and Tokai University finished first. So we'll see if there's a pattern going there after this race.
Yeah, yeah.
The fastest vehicles will be expected to reach Adelaide on Thursday or Friday, depending on the weather.
Yeah.
They just finished their qualifying, so I'll put up a link to their blog, and you can see the qualifying times and the team pages and stuff like that.
Now, my guess is they picked Adelaide because it's kind of sunny there a lot of the time.
Got it.
That's what anything I know about Adelaide is, it's like hot and sunny there.
Good to know.
Yeah.
I know where to go.
They picked well for that place. And Brian, what else is going on in geek news on your front?
Well, this is a bit of a geek bit. You know, there's a video showing this off that we'll put up on the GeekSpeak website, but MIT has a really exciting project called, it's called MBLOX, Momentum Driven Magnetic Modular Robots. That's a mouthful. What they are is self-assembling robots. These things are pretty cool. Basically, you get a bunch of these blocks together, and inside them, they've got everything they need to communicate with a computer that's going to control them all. But there's a flywheel in there, and that flywheel spins around, and they're able to interrupt the path of that flywheel, interrupt the spinning of that flywheel, and that allows them to jump these blocks around in any pattern they want. They can jump two blocks together, and there's magnets on the corner to help them line up and snap together.
Oh, my goodness, and, that's so cool.
You can take these blocks using the computer, sending the signals to it and having the flywheel change, and you can make them jump up on top of each other. You can make them click together in a row. Their whole goal here is to start being able to make robots that they can assemble into any shape and any size to perform the needed task.
Right.
And
I go straight to the overlords.
Oh, they're coming under the door right now and assembling a robot.
but you got to see these things spin around, jump up, come together
and make themselves.
Right now, it looks more like a toy. They're not going to assemble and start rolling
across
the
ground. Okay, so this isn't AI. They're not going to just, you know, spring to life and run for us.
But I think I read something about that they use magnets on the corners to make them stick together, and that they're talking about deploying them where, you know, where there's danger or bombs, and they can send them out there to do stuff or take video, and they're talking about minimizing them into something, you know, smaller, but who knows?
Yeah, right now these blocks look like they're about 2 inches square. Uh-huh. Once you start miniaturizing that down to something small enough that you can...
You can sneak it into creepy war zones.
Well, you can make something with more refined features, like Legos with smaller and smaller pieces.
Oh, yeah. So instead of being 8-bit, they'll be higher resolution.
Exactly.
Can you imagine one of those really elaborate Lego things that just, like, assembles and reassembles itself? That would be so cool.
It would kind of take the thrill out of having Legos, I'll say that.
I don't know. It depends on how much time you have.
Yeah, that's true. Thanks for the help.
I'm tired of this. Press a button, it assembles itself.
That would take all the fun out of it.
Wait a minute.
For their next version, what they want to do right now, they have a computer sending wireless signals to it, like a Wi-Fi network. But they want to put all the brains into the blocks themselves and just tell it, this is the shape I want you to make. And all the blocks will figure out where they should go by talking to each other.
Wow. Boy, it'd be nice if people worked that well together. I'm thinking of some people in Washington I'd like to work that well together. So here's the task. Make it happen.
Right.
It'd be really delightful.
Here's my wand.
All right, Lindsay, what's next?
So Yahoo is plotting bug bounties from $150 to $15,000. Previously, if somebody found a bug in their software, they didn't have a formal process for rewarding those people for finding it. And, you know, there's the whole white hat, black hat thing where, you know, you don't want the black hats, the bad hackers, to find the bug and make things vulnerable for the users. You want the white hats to find it and report it to you until you can fix it before it becomes a vulnerability.
Makes sense. So some encouragement for the white hats to get there quicker than the black hats do.
Exactly. Okay. And so a lot of companies offer serious bounties for white hats to come in and just hack at their software, find these vulnerabilities so that they can be patched before they turn into something bad. Before, Yahoo wasn't really giving rewards. One of their IT guys started sending T-shirts to people just of his own accord because he thought it would be nice.
Yeah.
And so far, you know, nobody complained about that. But... there was a Swiss penetration testing team called High Tech Bridge who found a vulnerability or a bug, and they complained saying, you know, where's the money kind of thing.
You know, hey, we did something good.
That's not a quote. Yeah, but they were expecting something different. And the T-shirts had gone out, and some people wanted something different than T-shirts. So he, out of his own pocket, had been sending Yahoo gift cards for $12.50.
Okay.
And they weren't happy with this. So they publicly complained. I don't know if it was Twitter or something like that, or on a blog. And after that, Yahoo took notice and decided to start this program. I'll post a link to this article, but this guy had a great sense of humor about it at Yahoo. He said, oh, they didn't like my T-shirts, you know, his attitude about it. But they're going to retroactively make this go back to June 1st so that this company will get their monetary reward.
Well, there you go, company. And, you know, okay, so why did they do it, given the current understanding about what was possible? But and I wonder if this relates to, like, when... for instance, there isn't as much money for advertising, but we can have people enter a contest to come up with our new jingle, and it creates buzz and mission accomplished, and they get a T-shirt.
Right.
I mean, is this because, well, it's this one guy sort of in his own pocket, so it sounds like it might be a little different from a company that's downsizing, figuring out a way to get done what they need to have done.
Yeah, it's him leading a team, and they have a whole team that kind of deals with this sort of reward system.
Yeah.
And it is sort of what you're talking about, that they want recognition. It's sometimes more than the money. It's wanting a company that is doing these penetrations that just wants public recognition that they are the ones that found the bug, and that promotes their business.
Yeah, okay.
So it's something more like that in a lot of cases.
Okay, so we get the goodie of being seen with a white hat on.
Yeah.
Is kind of the effect there.
And,
okay.
You know, come to us because we'll find your bugs for you and we charge this much for contracting or, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Got it. So it's sort of, it's like the reverse. It's free advertising for the people who do well rather than advertising for the company. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So I have a note for our podcast listeners since we have so many of those.
We do indeed.
the pledge drive continues this week, and so you can give anytime at KUSP.org.
Oh, that is a good point. It's sometimes people listen to a podcast of something that happened, one of these pledge drive shows, and they figure, oh, well, they're talking to the people who were listening that moment, not me.
Right.
But, honey, I have to tell you, it costs something to make the podcast available to you every week. And so if you can support it, even if you're a podcast listener, that's still very helpful. And KUSP.org will always be a place where you can make your contribution, even if you're listening to this show 5 years from now. It is still useful to support the station that made it possible. That's a good point. Thank you, Lindsay.
Sure.
And let's see. We update. Wendell in Salinas is still very proud to be matching your pledge during Geek Speak. What we'd like to do is to meet that match before the end of today's show. It was $500. There's 23 minutes left to go. I'm not exactly sure how much is left in that, but that's plenty of time. You can make a phone call within 23 minutes. You can make one right now if you wanted.
Yep.
It only takes a couple minutes. So keep that in mind as we go forward. Another story. Brian, you got something for us?
So there is another search engine out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a couple write-ups of it, and they're talking about it as the most interesting search engine come along since Google, which is saying something. So going back to, 15 years ago, Google was born. I remember using AltaVista and a couple of the search engines out there. And Google's bright idea was we can figure out what people want by figuring out what the popular pages are. And a popular page is one that's linked to by other pages. So the more links a page has, the more interesting it is, the more it's going to rank it high in your search results.
Hmm.
Well, this search engine, it's called, I have to pronounce this properly because it's called BlipX. Their whole idea is not how many links a page has, but how long somebody's been looking at that page.
Hmm.
So in order to do this, they've had to come up with a system that would be very different than the way Google has done it. But they have a plugin that you can download onto your computer and install in your Firefox or Chrome browser and probably the other ones as well. And what it does is it tracks how long you've been looking at that page and sends that anonymized information back to BlipX. So when you're searching for something, it's going to show you the pages that other people found most interesting because they spent that extra amount of time on that page.
Right. Oh, I see. Oh, that's kind of an ingenious way of... But it's giving Lindsay pause.
Yes, you saw my brow furrow.
Yes, your brow was a furrow there.
Let me guess, are there security implications here that you have?
Yes, well, no. I will get off the security horse for a moment. But if I used something like that, it would give false data because I don't close my browser pages.
That is a point.
I'm done with them.
I don't know.
Sure.
How many?
Nobody does.
I know.
Nobody
but,
does.
They must have been working on that so that they get some better view.
Right.
There's activity of the mouse. There's other activity going on the computer that they can use to judge that.
I wondered about that because sometimes if I'm like watching a program online and there's those advertisements in between, sometimes the advertisements won't start until if I click away because I'm prepared to be bored, then they don't start the advertisement. They have to wait until I have that particular window be the kind of the top screen, and they go, okay, now you're paying attention.
Yeah, there's JavaScript test activity.
I imagine there's something like that, that helps people know when a window is open versus when it's sort of actively open.
Don't you hate when it does that with video, with audio?
I do not like it.
It drives me nuts. It's like I start hearing this video in the background. I'm like, what is that? Because I open 3 or 4 pages at a time.
Which one is that?
Which one is it? Clicking through. But that's only the first time, and then I browse away, and it stops, and I go back, and then it starts the video all over again. And I'm like, okay, so there is some sort of activity that goes on.
Yeah, they're paying attention to something. It's not creepy at all.
No.
Well, I just wanted to point out, BlipX, they have a really interesting idea about security. They don't want anybody to get your data. They're not going to... they're not working like Google does through advertisements.
Uh-huh.
So they've tried to anonymize everything, but they're going so far as to make sure that the plugin in the future is going to be doing some sort of mesh networking, sort of like a BitTorrent network does.
Ooh,
so that the data gets back to their servers, not directly through your IP address, your computer's address.
Yeah.
Instead, it'll be bounced around between a couple computers before it finally returns to the BlipX servers.
Hmm.
So they won't be able to tell who looked at that page for that length of time.
So it's anonymized. It's not tied to a user. It's just data going
yes,
back.
Yes, and the plugin is open source. So,
okay, good.
I was really hoping you'd be on the security thing there because I could
so
answer
you could
you
plug
that
in. Yeah.
No, you worked it in anyway, Brian.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about Tor servers and stuff like that, and I figured they probably, you know, if they're doing this, they have to have something that they're doing to help us out with the security. The thing I get concerned about with companies that do this kind of thing is if they are associating it with an IP, which they're not, that when they get purchased by a bigger company, it's like, what happens to that data? So when
right.
little companies come along and they say, oh, we really care about you. We don't want to, you know, I always think what's going to happen when they get bought by some big company. And so I read
right.
the fine print in their agreements to see what happens if the company gets acquired. But BlipX, we don't have to worry about that. They're anonymizing. That's great.
Good stuff. All right. Well, gang, it's the special pledge drive edition of Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP. We'll be right back. All right. It's Geek Speak here on KUSP. Ladies and gentlemen, we know lots and lots of people listen to this show, and we're very grateful that you do. We've heard earlier some emails from people that not only listen to the show, but appreciate the impact that we had for them. And what we are hoping is that you who are listening now also understand the value that you find in the show, and we'll put some financial amount on that. Here's the deal. We have gotten no calls in the past 30 minutes
Gasp.
In support of KUSP, and I'm shocked, just shocked. And because the support is so important to the station, we've had such a lovely morning up until this point. So because you're listening, just the message for you is no one else is doing it for you. It's up to you.
Where are my geeks at, yo?
Yo, where are my geeks at? Throw some geek dollar in the holla. All right. So how can people do that? How can they offer their support to KUSP?
They can give us a call at 888-777-1507 or go to www.kusp.org.
And when they do, is it enough just to go, hey, guys, just checking in, or what else needs to happen?
No, we need them to bust out their credit card and give us $80. $80
$80.
Is all, you know, come on.
All right. Now, $80. That is a suggestion, but it's a darn solid one. And less, by the way, than the average gift to KUSP, which is something more like $100, $120.
Yeah.
So there you go. You could consider it a discounted rate, I suppose.
Personally, I prefer the $10 a month. That's what I do.
That's what you do is $10 a month.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, if $80 works, then that's fine because Wendell in Salinas is here to help. He offered a matching gift during Geek Speak. He especially wanted to support this show. I hope we do not disappoint him. So if you are willing to have everything you contribute to KUSP right now be doubled by Wendell in Salinas, we do hope you will contact us immediately at KUSP.org or at 888-777-1507. And we did get a call. Yay!
Let
that not be the lone sane voice in the world. Do join that person who is doing their part. We would love to hear from you, too. So once again, the phone number, 888-777-1507. Know that you won't be alone. Lindsay, you have some people to thank from earlier today.
I definitely do. A lot of people called in earlier today. I want to thank Marigold from Santa Cruz, George from Watsonville,
mm-hmm.
Michael from Santa Cruz,
nice.
Rick from Watsonville,
okay.
Helen from Royal Oaks. Let's see. We've also got Joe from Royal Oaks, Lisa from Ben Lomond, and another Michael from Monterey.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Michaels of the world, thank you.
Yep.
Everyone else, thank you. So that's how it's done. Each of those people took maybe 2 minutes out of their day to offer their support to KUSP. Some of them are doing as Lindsay prefers to do herself, giving a little bit each month. Some of them gave us a lump sum. It's really up to you how much you want to give. And the main thing that we're looking for here is just the decision to go ahead and support us and offer your support. Once again, Wendell and Salinas here to match your gift, wanting to do so, $500 of willingness to help you out with your contribution to KUSP. Brian.
So during this drive, you're hearing a lot about goals, hourly goals, and our $125,000 campaign goal. This is part of our effort to make sure this campaign ends on schedule. You may have already heard from us by mail, or you've been listening to us on the air as we make our case for support. By now, you probably know how this works. Thousands of listeners every year contribute to the maintenance of this station, and we squeeze everything we can out of every donated penny to provide you programs you rely on. By coming off of the sidelines now, you can help build the momentum so that we'll bring this campaign to the earliest possible end.
That's what we would like.
So $80, give at KUSP.org or 1-888-877-1507.
All right, that's it. So in support of how quickly something like this can happen, Lindsay, you had a geek bit that involved doing something very fast with lots and lots of bristles.
Indeed. So there's a team of dentists that created the 6-second toothbrush.
Okay, now I've seen a mock-up of this thing, and it looks completely bizarre and like a torture device to me.
It does. They created a toothbrush they say can clean teeth thoroughly in less than 6 seconds. So the manufacturer's Bizident, it uses the same scans that dentists use to fit braces and an extremely precise 3D printer.
Again, the 3D printing.
There's the geek tie-in.
Okay.
They create a brush for each individual customer. So each brush contains about 400 soft bristles and requires the wearer to grind their teeth in order to clean.
So you basically fit yourself with dentures that have a bajillion million bristles on them and chomp.
Right. That's pretty much the idea.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
They say that it eliminates brushing errors that people typically make. You know, who knew if we were all making these horrible brushing errors? But we were, and the experts say that more research is needed on this. I think this is just kind of, you know, a concept idea hasn't really been thoroughly tested yet. So there's the warning. But this technology comes at a price. A customer's first brush, which will last for a year, costs about, $400.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds like dentistry to me.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if insurance would cover it.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I just want to brush my teeth faster.
Exactly.
I suppose that's more time you could be working later. I don't know.
Yeah. It says that subsequent
make
brushes
that calculation.
Are, right. You know, take it to work, keep it in your purse. You have a little case for it. You know, people are like, what are you doing? Are you chewing? No.
I'm brushing my teeth.
Subsequent brushes are cheaper, and the old ones can be reconditioned for less than 100 euros, which, you know, I guess is about 140.
Oh, well, it seems like the main expense is just getting yourself fitted, right?
Yeah, the initial one.
Mm-hmm.
So because you're brushing all your teeth at the same time, you do extremely quick and accurate work, apparently, which is funny because I was actually thinking about something like this, but you know those toothbrushes that were really popular for a while where the top part rotated in a circle, kind of emulating what the dentist's polisher does? Did you ever see those? Anyway, it's got like a round head that has a little motor
and it just rotates.
Yeah. I was thinking, why don't we have something you can put in your mouth that has a bunch of little rotating heads that move around and clean each tooth, kind of like this? But I guess all the moving parts would be
I just thought of like a little toothbrush Roomba.
Exactly. That's what I want.
I'm waiting for the toothbrush nanobots that'll just go in there and clean them at night.
You
just
the self-assembling toothbrush nanobots.
Exactly. That would be great.
Yeah, they know exactly how to configure themselves to fit your mouth and then...
Right.
But you know what? Those electric toothbrushes tickle.
Yeah,
I don't think you'd be able to stay asleep during something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. You were thinking about sleeping while? Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. Well, I mean, that would save even more time, right?
Yeah.
It's multitasking.
What happens if you leave it in?
Oh, gosh. All right, so that is a geek bit. You really have to see it to believe it, and we'll post a link to it up at our website, geekspeak.org, after the show. So check it out. And Brian, you had... No? No? Okay. So it's back to you, Lindsay.
So data mining has revealed the emotional differences in emails between men and women. You know, I thought about whether I wanted to talk about this one, but it seems pretty straightforward.
I can imagine that there might be just anyways, qualitatively, some differences just because of social norms and so on. But so how does data mining know?
Right. So a lot of behavioral psychologists believe that men and women use language in different ways, like you were talking about. The conventional thinking is that women use language to foster personal relations, whereas men use language to elevate social position, which has a tendency to be more confrontational in nature. Mm. But previously, it's been difficult to prove or disprove these theories because they couldn't grab huge data sets or do large studies.
Well, thank goodness they can now.
Thank goodness for technology and the ability to process huge data.
Yeah.
So sentiment analysis is a new science, and it relies on large databases of common words that are marked as positive, negative, or neutral.
Mm-hmm.
These are associated with one of the 8 fundamental emotions: joy, trust, fear, surprise, sadness, disgust, anger, or anticipation. Then it's fairly straightforward to search a large data set for these words and score it and then see what emotions appear and how frequently.
Mm.
So what they've done recently is carried out the first large-scale study of sentiment in workplace emails. So they examined the emotions associated with words in over 30,000 emails and analyzed the emotional differences between messages sent by men and women. It turns out that women use more cheerful words in emails than men, and that men use more fear words, especially when communicating with other men. Both men and women are far more likely to use anticipation words when emailing a member of the opposite sex. The same researchers are developing a Google app that will allow users to track their own emotions towards the people they correspond with in Gmail. They say that they're planning to make a public call for volunteers willing to share their data for research purposes. Would you do that?
I'm not sure. If that's all they were doing with it, maybe.
Right. But
what do you think we'd find out? Like, what do we do with the results of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know I didn't like that friend.
I mean, what do you take from men using more fear words with each other and women using more cheerful words with each other?
I don't know that any of this is a real surprise. I've known this in my own relationships with other people all the time.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, Brian, because I know about the cheerful thing, but I don't know about the fear thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's man-on-man conversation
that
I'm not a part of. And it's sort of interesting to me that men use fear words with each other more. And what's that about?
Yeah, I mean, they said in the beginning, you know, that it was expected to have more aggression words. But to have more fear words is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, not me either.
Yeah. I don't know what those words are.
But it's not news
sure.
to you, Brian.
So are they saying fear as in the writer is feeling the fear, or as in instilling the fear in the reader?
They're just words that are flagged with certain emotions. I don't know what the fear words are.
Emotion upon receipt or emotion upon sending. Mm-hmm. I imagine the emotion
both.
Upon sending.
That's what I'd
be?
Imagine as well.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Send emails.
Right. Well, guys, there's just a few minutes left of the show and just a few dollars left on that match that Wendell of Salinas offered for GeekSpeak. There is $260 left to raise that we would love to meet in the next 7 minutes. Here's the good news. You yourself do not have to have $260 to be of service to the effort here to raise money for KUSP. All you need to have is whatever amount is comfortable for you. We suggested $80 earlier. If three or four people called us with an $80 contribution to KUSP, that would take care of the match from Wendell of Salinas. So if that's something that you're interested in, then we suggest that you contact us forthwith. There is a phone number you can call, which is 888-777-1507. There is a website, which you may be familiar with, KUSP.org. Right on the homepage there's a big red sort of area, semicircle, that says donate, super clear. All you can do is click on that, and 2 minutes later, you're done. Other people have done that earlier today, Lindsay. Who?
I just wanted to thank Tim from Capitola for giving us a call. We really appreciate it. And Rick from Scotts Valley. And Michael and Dolores from Seaside. Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
Dee
guys.
From Santa Cruz. Gail from San Jose. All the way from San Jose.
All the way from San Jose.
Jean from Santa Cruz. Helen from Scotts Valley. And Wally from Santa Cruz. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, gang. All right, it's nice to know that you're out there. And we'd love to know that you're out there, too. I mean, we know you are because you're listening right now. But we can't really tell. We don't have the data point until you contact us and let us know you're out there and offer a contribution to KUSP. There's still time. Please do call now. It's super essential that we keep the pace going here. This is a bigger goal for the drive than we've had in years, $125,000. It's steep, and we're hoping that we can make it without troubling people's schedules too much. So as soon as possible, contact us now, and then we'll be done with this thing.
Yeah. We know public radio works as well as it does because we know our most avid fans will do the right thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just, you know, a reasonable crowd, I think, the GeekSpeak crowd. So they could reasonably come to the conclusion that what we're asking for here is reasonable. And especially when the situation in Washington does not really allow for the kind of support, which it hasn't been much. I think 11% of our budget has been from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But, you know, nothing's happening in Washington right now, so we can't rely on them. People are still recovering from the recession. So the business support that we've gotten used to and the foundation support that we've gotten used to is not available like it used to be. And when it is available, it is rightly going to more kind of, beginning tier resources like food for everyone and shelter for everyone. That makes sense to us. So it's really up to us, those of us who can afford to give something right now and who have enough means to offer something, those of us who can pool our funds together and keep this radio station afloat, it's up to us. So we hope you understand that and can contact us now. Once again, what's the phone number, Brian?
That is 1-888-777-1507.
Yes, or you could go to KUSP.org. In the minute we have left, is there another quickie that we'd like to offer in terms of news for the people?
I heard that Facebook is going to build their own town.
Yeah.
What, like Celebration, like the Disney town?
Yeah, they're working with a local developer to build a 120,394-unit housing community within walking distance of their facilities.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a whole other realm. I mean, I get having the beanbags there and making it super comfy and feeding you so you don't want to leave. At one point, I know some companies were offering cleaning service so you wouldn't have to go home and clean your house. Yeah, but now they're just going to up and house us, huh?
Yeah, this is even revolutionary for Silicon Valley.
Is this right on the campus?
It's walking distance. From the campus. Yeah, it's like the company towns at the turn of the 20th century where American factory workers lived. And reminds me of that, where factory workers lived in a place owned by their employer and got housing and healthcare and law enforcement, church, and every other service.
Oh, my gosh. And how much does the toothpaste cost at the company store?
Exactly. Well, they say that this place is even going to have stuff like, you know, animal care and a bar and, you know, things like that. Should be interesting to see what happens.
Oh, my gosh. That is nutty. And who's, yeah, I guess... it might be terribly convenient for lots and lots of people to have something like that close to where they work.
I can warn you about something else with Facebook if we have time, but I don't know. I can put it on the site if we don't.
I say go.
All right. Cisco and Facebook are offering a check-in service for free Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. They're expanding it nationwide. So if you go to a business, you can opt out of it. That's the one thing I wanted to let people know because they make it look like you can't.
Okay, you can opt out. Well, we're hoping you're going to opt in to KUSP here in support of the station. This has been Geek Speak for October 5th. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. This is 88.9 KUSP Radio and KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of Geek Speak, please visit geekspeak.org. This is a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, so go ahead and use us in your educational facilities. And thanks to all the people who are answering phones today.